Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of the Be the Vessel podcast. My name is Daniel, and I am an intuitive psychologist acting as a bridge between Western psychology and the spiritual realm. I interview those called to the healing arts with various ways of knowing, serving, and channeling the most powerful medicine for our collective return to wholeness. If you like what you hear and would like to support the podcast, which is an offering of love, please check out my Patreon page where you can offer support or become a member of the Be the Vessel community with exclusive monthly offerings. Reverend Michael Salazzo is a psychic, astrologer, tarot reader, and self-proclaimed nerd with a Bachelor's of Science in Engineering in Chemical Engineering from Princeton University. He offers spiritual counseling, creates monthly meditations, and recently co-led a pilgrimage to Turkey. You can find out more about Michael at michaelsalazzo.com, which will be in the show notes. I was first connected with Michael through the Berkeley Psychic Institute during my own exploration of psychic and energy-based tools. Michael has supported me on my own journey both individually and in the group space. He is a grounded, supportive, and neutral healer, a rarity in today's world. Please enjoy my conversation with Michael, where we explore the personal spiritual journey, what spirituality looks like to each of us, and how we navigate that in our own lives. May this episode be an invitation, a gift, and a medicine to facilitate your own personal connection to spirit. Hi, Michael. Thanks so much for being here and welcome to the show.
Hello, Daniel. Thank you for having me.
So I'd love to start with a question which relates to sort of the way that we met, which is through the Berkeley Psychic Institute, BPI, as it's known. And I'm just curious if you could say a little bit about how you came to know that organization and how you, what guided you to it and how you first got involved.
Yeah, great question. I got introduced in 2002 when I visited friends who were living out in the Bay Area. I had been in Boston and pretty much lived on the East Coast my entire life. Always had an interest in metaphysics and other things, and had started teaching myself tarot and all of this before even moving out. And it was also at a time when my friend group had lost a friend to suicide. So all of us were in personal upheaval in a lot of ways. And I went out and visited and was sharing some of the work that I was doing, exploring spirituality and all these different modalities. And they said, oh, you like this stuff? You should check out CDM or BPI. You know, there's a place that teaches psychic tools. And I had never heard of a place that actually taught people to be psychic. It felt, as a comic book reader, like finding, you know, Xavier's school gifted, you know, it was amazing. And so I went in there just in, you know, with so much enthusiasm, got a hello. It was at a time when you could just walk in their Berkeley location. I think that was the Alston Way one, and got in, you know, some sort of energy check or hello. And I just thought to myself, this is awesome. I totally want to do this when I actually move out here. And my friends and I left and somehow got into a car accident immediately.
Wow.
After like pulling out, and we went back to the Institute. So I ended up, you know, they let us use their phone to call and, you know, get some help and whatnot. And I definitely got back sooner than I expected. But then I actually found them again after moving to San Francisco at a fair in Golden Gate Park. I was just running through and they were having a psychic fair, and got some readings, did a little Med One demo. And just there, I was like, I know I'm signing up. And in January 2003, I started taking classes and really just enjoyed that it was a tool-focused space and not a space teaching me morality or anything like that.
Yeah, I would certainly second the discovery of, wow, there are institutions and organizations that actually, you know, for me personally, having coming from, you know, Western psychology and more traditional training and things like that, the idea that you could be trained in these sorts of things was very new for me. as well. So you had just mentioned, as you're speaking, that prior to discovering BPI, you were teaching yourself tarot and things like that. So is it safe to say that your spiritual journey was more self-guided prior to BPI, or were there other elements to your journey prior to that point?
I would say self-guided is probably the most accurate description. I had friends where we would read the Celestine Prophecy together and
Love that
talk
book.
about that, and or go to see maybe What the Bleep Do We Know is a little bit after that time, but Celestine I think was late 90s. Some of those books where it just started to delve into metaphysics as something you can explore, something you can practice. I know it had been around, but it hadn't entered my awareness until that time. This is, I think, college in the late 90s. I was raised Catholic, and so there is a lot of mysticism and spirituality there, and also a lot of dogma that didn't ring as correct for me in what I was exploring. So there was a process of rejecting a lot of things that I had been taught in order to explore some of these other spaces and then knit everything back together in a way that works for myself. But I enjoyed that time of going to a bookstore and looking at the metaphysical section, finding, something that spoke to me and going home and reading it. One of the other books at the time was City Magic. Christopher Penzack, perhaps. I might not be getting the name entirely correct, but it was a way of looking at a city as a magical space. We're used to seeing forests and nature as these spaces, but looking at a city and what is it trying to tell you through graffiti? How do you go on a walk about, through it? It was self-taught as well, and I really appreciated that, and when, especially as I was beginning this journey.
Nice. I'm a big fan of Celestine Prophecy. I actually read it rather recently, and but I haven't heard of City Magic, and maybe I should read that because as we were just saying before I hit record, I'm not a huge city person, so I could probably use a shift in perspective. There's a lot of energy there that is a little overstimulating for me. But there's also something about what you're saying, which to me just feels a lot like the word freedom. Like when you're coming out of some organized religion or framework, and which I can certainly relate to in a different way. My ancestry is Jewish, and I was raised relatively within a loose framework of the Jewish tradition. My father is into Buddhist philosophy and things like that, so it was not super strict. But even whatever I received in that, which was fairly loose relative to maybe some of the more Catholic traditions, my very rebellious and resistant personality had enough of whatever was already being framed for me. And it seems like it's beneficial before maybe going from one framework to another framework to have time where you are exploring yourself and being led by yourself and going into bookstores and just seeing where what I might say now is where spirit might guide you, but at the time just saying whatever grabs your attention. And it also sounds like you weren't completely alone in this pursuit. Like you had a collection of friends that were similarly interested, maybe at different levels.
Yeah, I had some people that I could, and it's different than the level of community that a space like BPI and other similar spaces might provide. These are friends who were doing their own exploration. A close friend from high school, she was raised as a Mormon, and similarly, a lot of dogma and rules and restrictions and things that didn't really work for her in building a life and a sense of self that worked for her. And so exploring these alternative paths was healing. So we got to chat about that. And it was also a lovely way to stay in touch with someone from high school when we were off at college and elsewhere and going down paths. But a lot of it felt sort of monkish, going
Yeah.
in, finding the light in the dark. I don't know if I would call it lonely because it was exciting at the time. to have that space and to really start to figure out, well, what's true for me? Not in opposition to something else, but just what I feel called to. And that opposition period, I think, was more college of rejecting the upbringing. And part of that was throwing the baby out with the bathwater, is what it felt like, where, you know, I got rid of too much. And I don't think I could ever technically have called myself atheist, but I probably got as close as I could get, and just, you know, very hardcore science mindset. And interestingly, what helped heal that was a class that I took that was reading the Bible as literature. I think it might have been Elaine Pagel's one. We got to read it with some neutrality, read the Bible as a story, and reading it in that mindset or from that perspective took out the level of control that you have to view it a certain way, or it means this, or it's sacred. Say, oh, okay, who is God as a character? And what do you see when you look at it from that perspective? And that helped. That really helped, because it was a different way of looking at something. So I could see what I see for myself in it, instead of see what someone else tells me I should see.
Well, that certainly resonates with me. And I have certainly navigated my own periods of relating to the idea or the belief or the identity of atheism or agnosticism, and went through a period in college where I was very anti, like I was, or not necessarily as though I was anti-Judaism, but I was like, I am actively not Jewish, because I don't see how I could be this if I don't adopt the belief system. And later on, you know, that tempered, and I see, you know, the various aspects of who we are, that there is ancestry, there is lineage that we inherit in these bodies. And that plays a role. But I think the other point that you said is that for me, I didn't really have a belief in God when I was sort of exploring this Jewish framework that was laid out for me. And I, in retrospect, I really feel, you know, at least for me, the idea of God was never something that was going to be able to be taught to me. I'm not sure it can be taught to anyone. I'm not sure you can teach that concept. I don't know how else you could truly know God without a direct witnessing experience. And I'm sure that there's a spectrum of how those aspects can intersect, from teaching to experiencing, and one can lead to the other and vice versa. But for me, I believe and this has showed up in several stages in my life, of feeling like I needed to clear out, I needed to clean house before I could welcome in a new experience. And one of the ways that happened, I think, was me feeling like I needed to get some distance from the frameworks I'd been shown, and particularly whatever attachments or concepts were laid on that word God, before I could start to experience a completely different, very experience-based, an experience near understanding of what that means for me. And now I would say that I believe, or that I know God, at least as it applies to me in my life. So I can certainly relate to that cycle. And it also seems like, yeah, so you, at the time, you had called in people into your life who were maybe resonating at that similar place of discovery of freeing themselves from their own, you know, the Mormon tradition obviously has its own history and interesting lineage around that. So finding different people along the to sort of resonate with and journey together. But I would say for me, and it sounds like you might agree, that there just does seem to be something about the journey that at some point requires a little bit of monkishness, just in the sense of, you know, it's a personal journey. It's a personal discovery, and no one can really, people can tell you what they think your truth is, but no one can really know it for you. And, you know, I don't say this to be prescriptive, because maybe others have different journeys of really coming to know and understand themselves in community. But my relationship to community has been, you know, an ebb and flow. And when I have learned most deeply about myself is when there has been that space for me to explore. And there has been loneliness and other parts of that too, which has been part of my story. But yeah, the solitude, or at least the space to explore on your own, seems like a vital component to this process. Would you agree with that?
I think for many of us it is, and it's everything's sort of a spectrum. How do you learn through community? How do you learn through interaction? And how do you learn through isolation? And you know, there's also that sort of the spectrum where it can be a certain level of navel gazing, where you're kind of, what more growth do you have by being alone? And you know, sometimes the challenge actually is with other people. And so I've definitely gone through periods where, you know, it's one side of the you know, the balance, or the other side, in different ways. And often I have found that if I feel off in some way, I recharge by retreating to myself and getting back in touch with myself. And then I feel ready in some ways to reapproach the world. And especially if I'm going through periods of transition, that is often when I feel spending a little bit more time in that sort of monkish zone is helpful. It's like going into your cocoon. You know, you're going through a transformation. All right, let's you know, wrap around and nest up, and then emerge when we're ready. And so that works for me. And I acknowledge that it is not the way everyone does it. Some people define and transform within a group. And you know, that's how they do it. It just hasn't been the method that's worked for me or resonated for me.
Yeah. And of course, everyone's life path is differently and can take shape. And the medicine for them can come in all sorts of shapes and sizes. It sounds like we are similar in the ways the medicine of growth may come to us. It has certainly been my growth to find ways to re-engage in community in a way that serves me, because of the nature of my personality and of my body, you know, that empathic, sensitive quality really just took on a lot of stuff, a lot of other people's stuff, a lot of stuff I didn't understand, confusion, and really felt weighed down by systems that, you know, especially when you're a kid, you're just kind of thrust into. So for me, again, it was that same theme of needing to clear out systems before I could discover the ones that really lit me up and felt like a co-creation process for me. But of course, it's the ebb and flow, because I spent a lot of periods, and I think we can relate to these ideas from the light and from more of the shadow side. Like, alone time can be really light and growth oriented, or it can just be straight up depressing and contracting. And I've navigated.
Oh yeah, exactly. Why are you going? Yeah. Why are you doing it? What is your intention there?
Yeah. And when I was younger, it was a lot more of the, and it was the only protection that I knew. So it was in that. And then later, as working through the layers of shame and whatever else was there in understanding why I needed that protection, there was space for why my mind and body utilized that space for creativity, for my own energy, for recharging, like you said, so that I could bring the highest version of myself and truth into the world when I was stepping back into those relationships.
Yeah. And as you're sharing and you know, a picture sort of popping up of the balance to a lot of this, when I have felt like I needed to push a boundary, explore something, that maybe I hadn't had personal experience with. In those cases, having a community present the options in some ways from the community's perspective, not as these are the only options, but just looking and seeing what other people are doing and reading their freedoms, reading how they have chosen to express themselves, that has been an amazing teacher as well. I've been part of the burner community, and just the amount of creativity and freedom of expression and permission to explore your personal boundaries, that is something that I don't know if I would have seen that in personal meditations or going within. I had to go without to find, in some ways, what my new boundaries were after a period of growth. Okay, this, oh, I can keep going this way. Oops, that's too far.
And just to clarify for people, I believe you're referring to the Burning Man community. Is that
yes.
right?
Yes. Yeah, burners. Yes.
Yeah. And we can certainly touch on how you ended up being guided to that community and what it gave you.
It's different than the pyromaniac community.
It's different than people who just like to light shit on fire.
Yeah. Fire's great, but
but I will also say the word permission comes to mind for me, because the idea that we can just access greater and greater states of permission from within our own mind, which is the gatekeeper of all of our permissionlessness, all of our conditions and limitations, is quite a difficult inside job. So being, you know, through sheer exposure to what other people give themselves permission to, can certainly create access points of, wow, look at what they're doing. I guess that's, I can probably do that too. And I am sure that in the Burning Man space, there is a lot of permission granted for
There's
whatever
a lot of
you
permission.
might.
There's a lot of permission, a lot of co-creation. Yes. And I enjoy lots of different communities that they're not trying to pen me in. They're not trying to define how I can express myself as a spirit. And I value that. You know, because there are a lot of communities that would like to prescribe how people can express themselves. And we see a lot of that in the news these days. And I appreciate the ones that are, make sure this doesn't sound, I guess I would say spiritually secure enough to allow people to express themselves.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that is really what, to me, a loving to me, the frequency of love in a community is really about is a safe container to express who you are, rather than some conditional prescription, which we certainly see a lot of. I'm curious how you came to the Burning Man community.
It's a great question. If I think back, when I moved, and this is kind of a similar, when I moved to the West Coast, I had a friend who had gone, one of my, probably actually the same, one of the friends who introduced me to the Berkeley Psyche Institute. They had been to the burn and they saw where I was and like, you need to go. So I had a ticket to the 2003 burn and just didn't do any planning, like no planning whatsoever. I didn't even ask work if I could have the time off until I think a week or so before, and they're like, no. And so it was something that I had to let go, and I ended up just finding someone who was looking for a ticket. This person was incredibly happy that I was not scalping it. I was just, no, it says this price on it here, it took a decade before I went back.
Oh, wow.
And that was at a time when I had a fiance, and we had talked to a few folks who had been, and they invited us into their camp. And so that became, and this, that was 2012. And so we just made the decision, 2013 is going to be when we go. And we went, and it felt like a piece of me had been there. for probably that last decade, and there was a reconnection. And I, yeah, there's a certain freedom and a certain sense of adventure and play. It's its own level of kindergarten. We play at BPI and a vibration of kindergarten, and Burning Man very much matches that. So it was a long road to get there, and then it's been another decade since of adventuring there and beyond.
Is there a part of yourself and an expression of who you are that you saw come alive in the Burning Man community that you had not seen until then?
The first way I'd probably answer that is that was at a time when I was starting to take some breaks from my spiritual practice. And so part of what happened is my spiritual side reawakened. I remember it was probably towards the end. It might have been the night that they burned the man. And I was at the temple, and there's just a whole bunch of people there. And I ran into a campmate who was having a difficult time. And I asked her if she'd like a healing. And I hadn't worked with my healing guides in some time, but I felt called to offer that. And so I stood up and gave her a healing. And for me, in some ways, it was a moment of being seen as a healer, because I'm in the temple and this felt like the right thing to do. And there's, all these people around. And I had the permission to do something that might have been a little weird in a lot of other scenarios, but doing that there, that is something the community offers each other. There's a lot of spiritual healing and a lot of spiritual permission to have your own rituals, to have your own answers, to express your spiritual side in the way that works for you. In following years, I became a temple guardian to watch that space of the temple and help hold it for people to have their spiritual experiences. So a lot of my reintroduction to my spiritual side happened through the burn. And in addition to that, a reconnection with my body and permission to play and climb things and, fall down, scrape your knee, get back up again.
So I'd be curious what prompted you to feel like you needed a break from your spiritual path and what it was looking like at that time, and also what it looked like to take a break. But it also sounds like, and correct me if there's a different interpretation of this, but that in that setting, when you felt called to be that healer part of you, there was no expectation. There was no organizational structure within which this is how you show up to do these things that you were taught. It was a spontaneous, just purely intuitive manifestation of a part of you. Does that feel right in terms of why it may have felt appropriate for you then?
It felt appropriate, and I may not be able to fully express why. In some ways, it was answering that call from within. That call that said, offer healing. It just felt right. And I have learned to trust that inner intuition, more and more and more throughout my life. With psychic tools, with meditation, and with leaning into those moments where it pops up and you just listen to it. It says, okay, yeah, you should talk to her or give her a healing. And to answer your other question about the break, that one was in part choosing to align to a relationship that. That was a little different than where I would have been on my own, I think is kind of the way I might frame it. In that partnership, I chose for whatever reason to align to a different vibrational path that was closer to where my partner was. That ended, about a decade ago. And it kind of snapped me back to a path of exploring spirituality. And so it was a choice on some levels. It was also just an unconscious keep marching down a path, and you're a little further away, a little further away, a little further away, a little further away, until at some point you're like, whoa, this is quite far. And in a lot of ways, though, I appreciated that. I call it a break now because after a period of time, I started taking more classes or reintegrating into the BPI space. I appreciated it so much more from having a perspective of what happened to me, of losing my space by not using my tools, not meditating, and also that the community was fine with me leaving and coming back. I really appreciated that freedom of motion.
Yeah, and I find it interesting as we're discussing the navigation of our inner guidance and more external community guidance that it was an external source, a partner that you were choosing to align with that led you in a different direction, not necessarily astray because you were on some level we could say your soul chose to experience what it would be like without these things, so then you would have greater discernment and a greater knowledge base of what would feel good to you in terms of how you'd like to integrate.
Yeah, and I appreciate and honor the experience. And yeah, it's interesting to look back on those times. Sometimes they feel very divergent because they were. But it was a part of me that had to have that adventure, and now I'm here.
Yeah, I mean this life really is an adventure, right? Or it can be, and we are meant to explore or experience if we, I mean, at least for some of us, or at least the opportunity and the potential is there to do so without punishment, without judgment. The idea of, for some the life path may be more aligned with a monkish kind of, and I know I was a monk in plenty of lifetimes in the past, and that's
Yeah,
something that
no.
I've had to work through because I'm not a monk in this lifetime and I don't want to be. And that kind of rigidity or really holding tightly to a framework can be its own form of
Yeah.
stuckness. One thing I'll say now that may bring us somewhere else, but feels aligned to this time in your life that you've been sharing about is, as I was poking a little bit around your website, I saw your blog and read some of your writing, and you're a good writer. You're a good writer,
The
by the way.
very, very small blog section.
But what's interesting is I think your first blog was around 2014, which may have, been
Correlates.
yeah, part of this transitional time. And so the first blog you had on there was what was titled Michael Stands. And it started with the line, "I feel as if I have been crawling for most of my life, waiting for the perfect moment to get up and run." So can you speak to that line in any way that you wish, possibly what it meant for you to be crawling and what it looks like for you now to be running or now flying, perhaps, or however you describe the pace at which you are moving?
What resonates in the moment is that I was very stuck for a while on this concept of perfection, that there was some sort of moment, there was a right, there'd be a sign, there'd be something. And it was a delaying tactic. It was something that was, in some ways, me holding myself back by just, instead of just doing something. And that's what I had to face at some point, that waiting for perfection, like it's like a carrot. It's just gonna keep dragging you forward somewhere, but you're not really getting to a destination. And the whole running part is, in some ways, just choosing a direction, running, and if you want to change your mind, change your mind. And that time, you are right. That was the time when I was going through a lot. And to be very honest, it was also a time of not always feeding my body everything that would be super helpful for it. It was not always respecting the things that went into it. And so that took a little bit to process as well. So that was, oh, and from an astrological perspective, I think it was when Uranus was transiting my Mercury and Venus. A lot of shaking up from sort of those lenses. And I felt from, how I might affectionately call it, out of my mind at times.
Well, I will just say personally that I can relate to not treating your body with everything that it needs at specifically around that time as well. For myself, when there was a different kind of exploration that I
Oh
was
yeah. And
that I
I
was.
oh yeah, what were your adventures in that realm?
Substance use. Sex, partying, and I think there's this line for me between exploration and escapism that is it's not so clear because for me, like I said, earlier in my life, the aloneness was was the only protection that I knew, it was the only way I knew how to get safe. I didn't really have any other tools. So when I first started exploring substances, drugs of various kinds, it did provide a window and an access point for me to access higher frequencies and higher states that I could engage with others in this place with a sort of I don't know, a sort of cape on, not just as a protection, but as a way to access parts of me that I didn't feel I could without them. So there was some glimpsing there. There was some witnessing or some exposure to things that I didn't have previously. And then, like most things, continuing down that path, you lose some of the glimpsing you've
Yeah.
seen. You've walked through the door, and now you're just continuing to open and close it. And other things are starting to happen because the true medicine is to see what's possible within you, not just within the dependencies that have been cultivated. Also, around that time was the deepest states of sickness that I had encountered as I. My body got very sick around 2011, 2012, and I navigated that for 10 plus years, which is what was actually the deepest invitation for my initiation into a different life path. But yeah, there was a lot wrapped up in there. There was my exploration of a community that wasn't super healthy for me, but it was the only form of expression that I knew. And there was playfulness involved for sure.
Yeah, a lot of that resonates, and similar experiences. For me, some of my first psychedelic uses were incredibly therapeutic. They opened, as psychedelics do, they connect. They kind of bring things open, though, as you said, open doors. And so sometimes those doors were ones that I had so fiercely guarded, I had never even opened them in meditation. And here it is, in a state, and in the right setting with people who provided a safe space to talk about something that just comes up, and I was able to heal a relationship with a family member that had, in some ways, been poisoned by a hurt from my childhood. And here, a psychedelic opens up that door, and I can talk about it, become aware of it because I never had been aware of it, and healed it. And then, that was this magical moment, kind of changed my perspectives in a lot of ways on psychedelic use. And also, there were times when I just hit deep panic states where I had to realize, wait, why did I do this again? Why did I, choose this? Maybe just because other people are enjoying it doesn't mean that it's the right thing for me. And so I had to find my right relationship with a lot of these substances to honor that they are medicine, they are healing. And also, maybe I needed to integrate instead of continuing to take more and more.
Yeah, and medicines of all kinds can be abused. And so yes, we all have to navigate our own relationship to these tools because almost everything on earth can be a tool. It depends on how you use it. And I had many glimpses and forms of connection under the influence of some of these medicines that I had not had previously. And then me attempting to chase those experiences through the medicines because it was the only way I had known them was going to lead me to some places that were showing me that that's not where you keep going back to because they're an invitation to circle back around to places within yourself that can heal to access those states within you. And it wasn't until later in my life when I again the theme of clearing out becoming sort of a blank slate, so to speak, before I could welcome back in or reintegrate my relationship to some things. I had to be totally sober for a while, and I still am mainly that before I could acknowledge the true medicinal value of some tools like psilocybin, for example, and really actually ex have a very different experience, because there was too much distortion, too much unprocessed trauma. I would use that word, conditioning, emotional woundedness, just sort of brain and nervous system dysregulation for me to appreciate what was what I was being invited to experience. So it was through a cleansing and purification process that I was able to come into, a new relationship with some of those things, which I think is, as poignant now as ever, because there are larger and larger movements around some of these tools, and as they seep into the mainstream, and it just becomes it almost seems like it's just an objectively good thing for everyone to do. There's some question marks around.
I this is where this the both the spiritual and the scientific side of me is excited about the progress that's being made to look into these spaces. Yes, it's spiritual, like, and you need to honor those spaces that are that these are spiritual ceremonies and experiences a lot of people have. They need to be protected, and we need to study this. We need to actually do some research and understand, and a lot of that is going on, and it's really great to see that the scientific community it has both the interest and permission to do the work to understand how do we help people, in these ways. And it also, rarely bipartisan support for some of this, which is also heartening to see. I think in part because it tends to help our first responders and other people who really need a lot of assistance and help from what they face in their roles.
Yeah, and there is so much power and medicinal value, untapped, and also coming to light that is really beautiful to see. I will also just say, for me personally, I am just grateful for the experiences I have had and for the training I've had in clinical settings, and the other tools that I have to navigate the world in different ways, because what I came to see for myself was that some of the highest states I've ever experienced have been without any substance, have been through through energetic modalities and the chakra system opening and the channeling experiences I've had and connecting to guides and all sorts of things in meditation that I would have thought I must be on some sort of substance to be experiencing. Because when you glimpse that, you see the real power and magic of life, rather than just no, it all those things must be contained to a pill. Well, not necessarily. And so I'm very grateful to have glimpse that. And I also live in a community in LA right now, Los Angeles, where some people, it's their only tool. And I can just see the downsides of that if there's not a wider range of selection of tools to navigate life.
And you hit on something, that there's a large chunk of people who do look to pharmaceuticals to solve whatever is going on with them. Happier, bring it down, any sort of aches and pains or whatever. There's pills for everything. So, how much do you lean into that? What's the right balance there? How much do you heal yourself? Avoiding those entirely might be unhealthy in a sense. So there's so many different ways of looking at this and slicing and dicing. I know personally, I was raised where taking an aspirin was rare. Just be like, okay, you can't have too many of these. So, and then other people where it was very different, and they almost have to wean themselves off of that concept of, oh wait, I might need to do something else other than just take something for what I'm feeling. And what you were saying about feeling some of these states without any other additional substance, that can be truly magical, to just have that. And it reminded me of the people who are the whirling dervishes, whose spiritual practice is elevated through just twirling and just twirling, twirling, twirling. And that's how they get closer to God. It's an altered state without a substance.
Yeah. Because I feel on one level, it is so beautiful to be able to glimpse such truly spiritual, in the sense of almost non-physical, not disembodied states that connect you to a different sort of dimensional plane or spiritual, spirit-based plane of existence. And yet we are here to live in bodies, as far as I know. So learning how to do that without attempting to live in the spirit plane while in the human form, is I think a big lesson, because it's glorious there. It's glorious there, and I look forward to rejoining that realm when it is my time to do so. But finding ways to stay connected, and we all have different sort of life path in terms of what that relationship to the spirit realm is meant to look like. For some, it may be non-existent. For me, it is. It's pretty pretty close. I actually feel that I'm meant to live almost between realms at times, and my life path is structured to support that. At the same time, my path and invitation has been to take really good care, or learn how to take really good care of my body. And actually, my spiritual growth has come through a lot of physical body healing, in terms of seeing the possibilities of what can heal, which, I feel is part of my path to bring to light really what is possible in the realm of physical healing. For others, it may be to disregard the body completely and be like, hey, this isn't my truth, so who gives a shit? And that's great if that's for you. Mine has certainly been to reintegrate deeply with the body, to listen to it, to recognize it, to understand it, and honor it as much as possible.
Yeah, I that resonates as well, where there was certain level of, spiritual programming or something that almost eschewed the body. I'm trying to remember exactly where I got introduced to that. Maybe it was certain Catholic ones, or maybe it was other spaces, but it definitely put the body lower than the spirit. Put almost a level of competition between the two. Oh, the body might want this, but that's wrong. The spirit needs to clamp it down. Versus working with or partnering or allowing yourself to maybe not see the distinction. Okay, spirit, body, energy and matter, where do those things blend? Where are they the same thing? Similar, when I started honoring my body and working with getting the spirit more and more in the body versus focusing on getting it out and ignoring the body, I definitely got more present, in this realm, and allowed myself to enjoy the realm more. You know, there's a lot of things you can do here that are amazing. And if you need a break, go to sleep for a bit. You know, go to
Yeah.
the astral.
I mean, oh my God, there's been so much pleasure and peace and grace from recognizing how my body can heal and be free from pain. And for me, yeah, those early states of seeking altered states and states of being really came from needing to escape the body because my body was so deeply uncomfortable. It had a really traumatized nervous system, which I've spoken about how the word trauma can be really buzzy and overused, but I'll use that word now. A very conditioned nervous system that I came into the world with based on lineages and all sorts of things, and then things in early life that added to that added to that algorithm or stew. And so to at least for me, for others, look, if you're Eckhart Tolle and one day you just wake up and you get a glimpse of something so immense that it really everything else writes itself, writes itself not in the penmanship way, but in the sort of correct everything else sort of aligns for you. That's great. Good for you. That was not my path. So attempting to reach spirit or, reading Eckhart's book as a kid and being like, oh, I'll just get enlightened. And then I'll just, it didn't happen that way for me. I needed to learn a bit about, I have a Western mind. I needed to learn a bit about the nervous system. I needed to learn. And all of that integration of knowledge has actually allowed me to unfold my life path as a bridge between Western science and the spiritual realm, and to create access points for healing the physical body and for navigating what I would see as like a layer cake of, a layer of the spiritual realm, a layer of the energetic body, a layer of the physical body and the emotional body, and that there's just this parallel process that is happening all the time simultaneously. And as I work on one layer, another layer is supported.
Well, thanks. Now I want a piece of cake.
My mother said the same thing to me when I used that metaphor. She's like, you had to bring up the cake,
Oh, it's
didn't
great. Like I used to make these trifles and all these things. I'm like, oh yeah. So, yes, wonderful metaphor. And I have a sweet tooth.
Yeah, so is food something that you've navigated your relationship to in on a
It's
personal
constant. It's actually constant. Sometimes it's based on space. Like right now, I'm in a temporary space and I don't have the access to the full kitchen that I like. And so my norm of eating, oh, this is my normal breakfast, and I enjoy a few eggs and some steamed spinach and whatnot. Now it's more cereals and whatever I can kind of pour in a bowl. So I, in some ways, have to honor what is available and work with that with my body and say, okay, I might not be able to always have everything that I want exactly how I want it, but let's get as close as I can now. And then we will realign to something that is even better later. So it's that perfection that we talked about earlier, letting go of a certain level of perfection. Because if I stuck to perfection and say, oh, well, I can't have this, I might actually starve my body because I'm not allowing it to eat anything. By letting go of certain restrictions, I might feed it, and maybe there's a certain imperfection in there, but I also trust my body can process a lot of things and also bounce back from a lot of things. So it's that working with it, it's that healing that you're talking about. And it's just an iterative process.
Yeah, and I do believe that that flexibility and permission is so important in navigating our relationship to anything, particularly food. I love the line that I heard that says, the kale isn't going to heal your trauma. And it's just important because these things are really supportive, but they're tools. And if we're eating the kale out of fear, then the fear energy that we're creating in the energetic body may be doing more harm than the kale is doing good. And I don't think my mother will mind me sharing that she's navigated a relationship to food that has been challenging at times. And for me, it probably because of my male identity and how my metabolism worked, I wasn't forced to recognize a difficult relationship with food until later on, because I mean, when I was a kid, I just ate Pop-Tarts and pizza bagels and whatever. I felt like shit, but I wasn't like thinking like, oh my God, I gotta fix my relationship with food. I didn't understand. I ate 20 bowls of cereal on the weekends when I was a kid and overdosed on sugar because on one way that was how I was coping with things. And again, didn't realize that until later, but I did have severe gut issues throughout my life, and that's I think there's some lineage there within the Jewish ancestry, and just another it was another invitation and opportunity for me to see what can heal. And so later in life, when I was cleaning up my the way that I ate, my relationship to food, and some might say that I can have an extreme personality at times, so I can really throw myself in, whereas at some point in my life I may have been eating a full large deep dish Lou Malnati's pizza by myself on a Sunday in Chicago after I'd been doing copious amounts of other things that weekend, and go from that to more recently doing things like a 4 to 7 day fast, and then getting really interested in intermittent fasting, and then cutting out lots of things from my diet. And that's not necessarily for everybody. I don't, but for me, it was a huge aspect of transformation because I got to see what could happen when I introduced or took out some things, and just got to see how I would use the language of sort of vibration of frequency could raise, and how the energetic body could clear, and how the sensitivity I'd always felt could be honed and channeled appropriately rather than just reactive to all the toxicities and negative emotion energies and things that were just swimming in my body. The clearing out and purification process with food has been a magical part, a magical linkage between the physical realm of substances and substances like food, and the spiritual and energetic realm, seeing how the relationship. And now, and so I really, some would say I have a very extreme way that I eat and things like that, but I like it. I love what I cook. I don't feel deprived of anything. It is, look, and this is where the flexibility comes in. I was just on like a bachelor party in Tahoe. Like, yeah, am I going to be able to do all the things that I would normally do for myself in the span of those days? No. But I have learned comfortably how to bring my authentic self to various spaces to speak my truth. And I frankly think a lot of my friends are jealous of me because I feel a lot, hell of a lot better than they do after an experience like that. But there's also flexibility, and like, yeah, I don't get to cook every night the way that I would, but it's, yeah, finding what feels good to me. And we probably share this some of this brainwiring in terms of the part of my brain, part of my conditioned mind that could be quite punishing if I veered off track and would just feel maybe this sense of panic of, oh no, we're behind now. We're not going to live in the highest vibrational state that we would be if we didn't have that piece of chocolate or whatever. And yeah, trusting that there can be some greater flexibility and fluidity here to experience all that life has to offer.
Well, for me, chocolate is very high vibration.
Yeah, chocolate's
So
great. No, I love
I try to
chocolate.
have
I
as
love
much
chocolate.
chocolate as I can.
Yeah, same.
But joking aside, it is a constant state of learning, and not just because whatever it is that I'm doing that I'm asking my body to do with me, whether that's working out or going for long walks or just sitting in a chair meditating for a while, I have to feed it for those activities and keep it nourished. And if I don't do it well, it'll tell me in somehow or some way, but also I need to listen. And I recognized that at one point I wasn't listening to my body telling me that it didn't want something. And I eventually had a kind of moment where my throat closed a little bit. And then it dawned on me, wait a minute, my body's been telling me for a while. Like I always just thought my throat was tight. Like I could like crack my Adam's apple, and I never put it together that it was food. And finally found out I had a couple allergies. It's like, oh, okay, like my body was telling me and I just didn't hear it. So that relationship with food and spirit and body communication, there's a whole lot to clean out there and to work to release media programming, societal programming, family programming, genetics, all these different things that might not align to actually where your body and spirit are. It's a process. I try not to be perfect about it. I try to have cheat days every now and then to just sometimes even remind myself, oh, yeah, that wasn't a good idea. But I thought it was, and it wasn't, but I enjoyed that box of candy at the movie. Great. And other times where I might try something new, or try a new restaurant or try somewhere else, just see what it's like because it's fun. I enjoy experiences. And my body will tell me, nope. Tasted good, but not great elsewhere. And I have to listen. I definitely, I don't know if I always see it in terms of trying to maintain a vibration, but it's maybe the words that I would use for me are honoring and feeding my body well. And I have learned, don't go to the grocery store hungry. I just come home with stuff that I should not have. But every now and then, a pint of ice cream really makes me happy.
And look, at the end of the day, I just want to fucking feel good. That's why I'm doing all this. That's the whole point of all this, is to feel as good as I possibly can. And I've discovered some ways that actually really make me feel good that I didn't know of before. But like you said, it's not my intention to restrict myself of new experiences. Like, so I don't eat, I don't eat meat and some other things right now. But if I'm with my family and it's at a really nice restaurant and it's really like, I'm gonna have, I'll eat it. I'll eat it because I want to have the experience. I want to have the experience. And for me, it's something that I can do. There are other things like gluten that I'm a little more careful of just because the consequences of that I've learned for myself are different. But there are other things that I do. I never want to give up the opportunity to have new experiences. And like you said, even if it turns out like, oh, learned a lesson there, I won't regret showing up with the intention to have a new experience. And I think it's so important what you said, which is, yeah, we could all just really benefit from the opportunity to listen to our body, which none of us are really taught to do. Speaking of kindergarten, this is what should be taught in kindergarten. Kids should be taught how to listen to their bodies. It's more important than necessarily learning how to count blocks or whatever. And at least at that point. So learning how to listen and having the opportunity and the permission to explore different styles of eating or showing up in the world, so we can, with more intention, wisdom, and awareness,
Yeah,
really
agreed.
cultivate a path.
And what also came up as you're sharing, the times when I've recognized I throw all my rules out the window are in times of scarcity, even if it's manufactured scarcity. Burning Man, to just say hello to that again, you go there and you have to bring all your food and all your water and everything. And there's a wonderful sharing sense of community in a lot of ways and gifting. And at the same time, I might try something there because it's there. And because food is precious in a way in this sort of abundant society that many of us have access to, when you are outside of that, everything's a little more precious. And that luxury of picking and choosing is really, I'm really aware that it is a luxury that we have. So yeah, those are times too when if the body needs food, it's going to get something. And it's usually whatever's readily available and offered.
And it certainly seems, not that we'd ever choose scarcity, but there certainly seems to be a medicine in putting ourselves in experiences that allow us to appreciate more preciously food or shelter or whatever. And, you know, whether we choose that in going camping or hiking or out in nature or a festival community like Burning Man, yeah, you are not forced. You always have a choice, but the choice is a bit more dealt for you when it's like, look, we got bread and cheese and bacon. Do you want it or not? You know, and it's like, and for me, that resonates because as I have aligned more and more with the relationship to food and other things that I have now, there can be this, yeah, that more what I would call compulsive or habitual or control-oriented part of my brain that is like, okay, I'm going to be out of my comfort zone where I have an abundance of all the things that I like, and I get to go to Trader Joe's and I can pretty much get whatever I want from there. So, you know, even if I go off the edge at Trader Joe's, it's like not that bad, you know? whereas, you know, there's just a different selection elsewhere, but I think it's good to work with whatever the panic or embodied state that shows up when we start to sense, oh, I'm not going to have what I need, because I've noticed, you know, if I exclude a lot of things from the way I eat, then when I'm traveling or things, it's like, wow, I'm in an airport and there is nothing that I want to eat in this place. And so honestly, for me, I usually just maybe fast for an entire day when I'm traveling, which has been a sense of freedom for me, because I see that I can go without certain things for periods of time. But at other points, I think it's good to learn how to walk that line of like, well, if you're sending yourself into a panic, like maybe there's an opportunity to bring your body some comfort and verge away from the routine for the moment.
How have you noticed fasting with air travel in relation to jet lag? I had heard a while ago people talking about what happens to your digestive system on a plane, you know, and also sitting for so long in a certain way that it basically stops. So if you're feeding it a whole bunch of food, you're not doing anything with that, or it's sort of backed up. And then all of a sudden when you're landed, then the processes start, and jet lag might in part be because you are now digesting a ton of food and your body's working. So you have almost a food coma, but you know, part of jet lag was attributed to the food coma. And so as you're talking about fasting, then you wouldn't even have any of that. So I just wonder what your experience of jet lag was like before and after exploring fasting while traveling.
Yeah, so firstly, I'll preface this by saying I'm not a medical doctor. And I haven't read all of the research on fasting because people get so up in arms about everything related to food. But fasting has, I want to say it's improved every aspect of my life. Right now, I just mostly do what some may refer to as more intermittent fasting, where I just don't typically eat for a period of time through the morning. But I will also say I do everything intuitively. So I've cultivated this sort of intuitive core, this kind of weather vane that someone else had called it. And so I follow that. That is my highest authority. And that has really supported me as I navigate every aspect of my life, is to really check in. And because some days, you know, if I've been strength training in the morning or something, I'll have
a protein shake at 10 a.m. or whatever. So I don't do anything all of the time. That's sort
yeah,
of,
yeah.
I mean, there are probably some things I do all the time, but a lot of the things, yeah, a lot of the thing, ideally, a lot of the things are flexible as it relates to my own intuitive guidance. But as I started exploring fasting, a lot of amazing things happened for me personally. Firstly, I got to see how I was emotionally dependent on food, which I'd mentioned. I had not been invited to explore a ton, even though I knew, you know, there were other more, I would call sort of severe things happening that I was doing that took center stage. But when I started cleaning up different layers of my life, suddenly food rose, and I could feel a deep sense of anxiety, like, oh no, am I gonna have to address food? Like, that's, you know, I'll cut out alcohol and things like that, but oh, man, food, like, what is left in life, you know? But what I start it was it so it was an invitation to work with another layer of anxiety, or at least another layer of attachment. And so I got to see the capacity of my body that I did not need to eat nearly as much as I thought I needed to. I had all these conditioned beliefs based some in, you know, purported science and trends, like, no, you should actually eat every hour. You should eat every 30 yeah. seconds. You know, like, people have lots of different ideas about how you should relate to food. And my mother has often had this idea that she would get low blood sugar, so she would need to eat. And I was like, okay, yeah, I don't actually know about that, but maybe. And so I never thought about it. And I meet every meal, and I, you know, lots of different things, a lot of fast food as a kid. So starting to explore that journey, it was really just like, anytime you do, anytime you step out of your comfort zone and do anything that might, you know, deprive you or create a kind of sacred space or a kind of initiation, going without food for a little longer showed me what was possible. And I started to feel good right away. And, you know, then there's my personality who likes to push things. So I pushed it, you know, and I did some multi-day water fasts that were very challenging. But what I will say is that it actually felt like my whole nervous system started to rewire. Like, and for weeks after, it felt like I was almost being reborn from, like, and this is where research does come in, and you start to enter ketogenic phases and autophagy, if I'm pronouncing that right, phases where the body actually starts to heal itself and heal cancer cells and get rid and repair and all the sorts of amazing stuff that I won't speak to so eloquently. But for me, it was about healing trauma, because most of my life has been about healing trauma and emotional and belief oriented wounds, and just seeing what shows up in those states, you know, just accessing states of clarity that I hadn't before. So all of that was a part of the incredible medicine and benefit for me, not to mention just my gut feeling really good, and rewiring my relationship to food a bit, because when I came back to eating and the way that I now eat, it was just different. I had a different understanding of what I think my body learned along with me. My nervous system learned along with me that, oh, we'd been so used to eating at this time, so this is just when we signaled to you that we should eat, because right. we thought that that's what, but the body doesn't always know either. The body is kind of like a child. So it's just taking messages too. It's reacting to things. And so my body got to learn along with me. And as a result, my body has changed a lot. And now, just to come back to your question, when I fast, I have a quite sensitive body. So when I travel, you know, I feel energetically a lot of the impacts of that. We could use the word jet lag, or just the energy of being in an airport and an airplane and being in a different time zone and all of that. And when I allow my body to, I will say, process the changes of that without needing to digest food, it tends to go really well for me. I couldn't say all of the reasons why, but I am able to, I would say, clear my energy quicker, adjust quicker to the new place that I'm in, and just generally feel better.
Great. It's awesome. Yeah, I also agree. We all have our own relationships with our body and with food. Also, I'm not a doctor. I like saying that. I'm not a doctor. I have been trained as a scientist, but this is definitely a spiritual practice that I'm in for the most part. Everyone finding their own truth is something that I enjoy. And your truth about food and your truth about all these other things, it's a practice. It can change. And you might have had relationships with food that became a pattern, and you have to break down those patterns. And just as you said, taking a step away from the pattern or consciously leaning away from it can really shine a light on them, so you can dismantle them and then figure out what else do you want to create, or how else do you want to relate to food.
And so that when I go back to those, if I go back to those same foods, same patterns, things like that, that it's from a different place. It's from a different place of awareness. It's just like having experiences, like we were saying before, exploring, having new adventures, things like that, that then you can circle back around and come back with greater intention and wisdom to what, I choose to put in my body.
What makes your body happy? What kind of food?
The first thing that came to my mind was avocados because I do love avocados. But man, the funny thing is I'm such a people wouldn't probably necessarily see this about me because of the way that I eat, but I'm actually like an amazingly adventurous eater. Like I would theoretically eat just about anything, and I love trying different foods. Now I eat in a different way now, so the foods within what I in the realm of what I eat that make me happy are like, I mean, I love roasted eggplant and I love, like, there are things like that, but with it, I mean, I loved everything, man. I loved steak, and I loved when I was a kid, I loved vanilla souffle. That was like, it was this joke within my family because like I had it once and I was obsessed with it. I'm not
What
even
is
sure I've
vanilla
ever.
souffle?
I don't even know. Souffle is like this kind of like cake that you that's
Oh, gotcha.
usually
Yeah,
like,
vanilla. Yeah.
yeah, really like
I mean,
elaborate thing to
those
make.
are
And
amazing. Yeah.
I love like cheesecake, and I love all kinds of things. It's even a hard question for me because like you name something and I mean, pizza, whatever. Like, I love eating all kinds of foods. But to be honest, now, what really makes me happy is finding foods, creating meals, or having meals that I really enjoy that I also feel really good about after. Like, so that balance of like finding, like, I do this thing for myself where I create these sort of homemade desserts, I would call them. Other people might not think they're desserts, but they're desserts to me. And finding ways to tinker with it and improve it and make it taste really good for me, where it's still within the framework that where my body feels
Yeah.
really good. That's what makes me really happy.
Oh, I tried to do that for a while when I think I was doing or attempting to make vegan pumpkin cookies.
Yeah, see, I would
And
love that.
yeah. And it was experiments. And that was actually part of the fun. I grew up with a mom who would experiment with making things. And that sense of creativity, where you're not just doing something because it's in a cookbook, but you're just saying, okay, what happens if we do this? I've enjoyed playing with that. And one of those times is trying to make a vegan cookie. And sometimes they came out well, and other times they didn't. And for a bit, I even thought I was writing down the recipe, like, okay, let's do this as experiments. Let's, like, label them and whatnot. And then I don't know what happened to, like, those recipes that I actually enjoyed. They were fun, but they were definitely different. They weren't like that sugar bomb cookie type of a thing because they were meant to be a little bit healthier. But yeah, pumpkin vegan cookies worked. I just don't know anymore years later what happened.
We're gonna have to rediscover that. Well, and because yeah, I mean, I love cookies. I love ice cream. I mean, ate it all as a kid. Fast food, like I love that stuff. But you know, it depends at what level of happiness we're talking about. Because like you know, the pleasure that eating experience is one moment that is pretty short lived. But a different kind of happiness that I'm exploring for myself is that balance and that game of like, oh, there's like vegan ice cream and it's like really good. And you know, there's things that there's ways to play with finding really, you know, people who are really creative and smart and create things that are really delicious that are actually supportive or not terribly destructive for my body. And so that navigation makes me really happy.
So all of this talk about food and the body reminds me of one of my favorite cartoons that I've seen recently online. The Awkward Yeti is a cartoonist, and they anthropomorphize different parts of the body as the characters in the cartoon strip. And there's one where the liver is in the background and it's addressing the fourth wall and saying, you know, if you listen to your body, it'll tell you what it needs. And the liver's like, for example, and it starts to say what looks like the word iron, but the tongue shoots out in the forefront of the screen and says ice cream. And then the liver keeps trying to say iron, and the tongue just keeps shooting out and just saying ice cream.
Yeah, speaking to the competing voices that that we all navigate as sort of the greater awareness of our experience, sitting at the head of the table listening to the different aspects of ourselves. Oh, yeah.
It's like being the CEO of yourself, where you have all of these different managers and all these different parts that are all contributing to that company that is you, that collection of cells, a collection of awarenesses. And do you have an executive that is honoring all of those voices, that is listening, or is it just ignoring everything and trying to do what it wants? And you know, I've gone through stages of both of those, and it feels better to be listening and incorporating versus trying to overwhelm everything with whatever executive thoughts that I might have.
Yeah, my intention these days is to be an executive that cultivates a safe and compassionate and flexible and fun and healthy and aligned space for myself, compared to the quite perfectionistic and impulsive and punishing executive that used to run my life. And it's funny because the compulsivity parts may have actually been way worse when I was younger, but my life looked more out of control. So it, you know, that style of execution was not really doing anything that effective. But as I got more committed in different elements of my life, because I would definitely be channeled that commitment and discipline. I am definitely a disciplined person, but the emotion-laden aspects of it, in terms of the punishment or the feeling guilty or the shame or whatever, just putting all of that essentially into the garbage and not using any of that to instruct myself or instruct the parts of me has made for a much much better company to live in.
Great. That's awesome. Yeah, being happy with yourself and growing into that too and leaning into that, it's a journey and it's a rewarding one. And it's awesome to see you're here now. And you had to get through all of that to get to this point. And it advises where you are now. You know, I look at the diverse experiences I've had, and some of the ones that were the most challenging helped me show up for others who are going through different challenges. And it advises my perspective. I'm happy I'm not in them, but I also value them.
And I'm just so grateful to be where I am, frankly. And my journey was not for the faint of heart and is not at times, but no one's is. It's really about what aspects of challenge you choose to engage with. There's certainly a more growth oriented challenge. And then there's just a challenge that is just feels like flailing. And sometimes growth feels like flailing too, but it, at least it tends to be, filled with other aspects of the experience that show you some, give you some feedback and validation that it's worth something.
The picture that came to mind as you were, you know, saying hello to that is, you know, someone who hasn't been taught to swim yet, but that's thrown into a pool. All right, here's your growth. You're going to flail around until you figure out the right motions to actually keep you afloat and get you moving. So there's something about that where you're thrown into growth. You might flail for a bit, but that is also you figuring out the right things to do to get you through it.
Yeah, and I would never want to, because I flailed for a majority of my life, and then things started to settle and integrate. But I think it would be a mistake to throw all of flailing out the window, because sometimes flailing is part of it. And when I actually packed up my life and drove out to California, there was a lot of flailing involved. It was intentional, and I signed up for a mess, but it was quite messy, and there were points where I was questioning what the hell I was doing, but that flailing did come to fruition. And so I will continue to make space for flailing when it's needed.
And even that moment that you just said hello to of questioning, you know, I find a value in that, not in the dwelling on the doubting, but in allowing myself to say, okay, you're here. What do you think about it? Do you like it? Like, what are your thoughts about it? Instead of trying to silence that questioner, because it is a value to look at something again, you know, to just say, okay, all right, from this new perspective, how do I feel? If I keep going back to that, then there's something else going on. You know, there's something that's in, you know, almost an invalidation or whatnot, but there is a healthy space for me of questioning, which is just like a check-in.
Yeah, and I think that is the relationship of what I would call, you know, the relationship with our intuitive wisdom or our inner guidance, the primary voice that we are ultimately choosing to listen to, which is navigating that check-in process and when it veers into that chronic doubt and questioning and uncertainty, and recognizing, yeah, that we can't just smother it to death. Yeah. It's a different kind of navigation of allowing it to speak and then poking holes in it if we need to, but hearing what a part of us is carrying, hearing that, you know, the layers of uncertainty and fear that show up when we enter a new phase and either practice trusting and having faith alongside the doubts and fears, or maybe at some points listening to it if we feel it's valid.
Yeah. Yeah. I like seeing things through the most positive light I can. That's just often how I like to look at it. So even if something is posing a challenge, you know, there's that question of, okay, what are you offering me? This is a gift. You know, even these questionings, it's a gift. And if at some point I see it and I say, okay, well, the gift might be in remembering that I don't have to listen to you. You know, or, you know, it can show up in so many different ways, but, you know, it can still be framed as a gift or as an offering.
Yeah. And that is certainly the way I see my life. And that has been one of the most transformative aspects of seeing life as a medicine. And it's certainly easy to make fun of that and like, oh yeah, the person who sees everything as a gift. But let me tell you, it has just made my life a hell of a lot better to from a very functional perspective, regardless of if you really believe that to be the case or if you believe there to be some universal intelligence that is inviting you into growth experiences. Functionally, it has made life a lot better for me, and it has transformed the way that I perceive my life, because it is all a perception. And if you're perceiving it always in the most cynical and hateful of ways, it's probably not leading you to the greatest experiences as a result.
But you might be a really good stand-up comic.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. You might be very unhappy, but you might be very funny on stage and very successful.
Exactly. Yeah, people have built careers on much less.
Yes, yes, absolutely. Yeah, so to each their own. To each their own.
Indeed.
Well, Michael, this has been an absolute pleasure, and has flowed as I thought it would, incredibly effortlessly and in all directions that I trust have been divinely guided and will be of high service to everyone who listens. So this may be a good natural point for us to begin to wrap up. So I'll just offer the invitation for you to share anything else you'd like, including, you know, some of the various offerings that you have that may be upcoming, including the workshops and things like that, or anything else you'd simply like to address.
Great. Well, thank you. I really appreciate the opportunity to come here and chat about spirituality. I also really appreciate that we can do this through a technological medium, you know, and not all be in our little isolated monk boxes everywhere. So thank you for creating this platform. For folks who would like to learn more about me, if you can type michaelsolazzo.com, you are welcome to find that. But also hellospirit.org gets to me. I still, you know, from having lived in San Francisco for a bit, I think sfpsychic.com goes to me. So there's a few different ways to find. And if you are looking to spell my last name, it's Sollazzo. And I offer monthly workshops on second Wednesdays. The information will be on my website. I offer reading spaces and also astrology and a bunch of other things that are more communicated through email. So you're welcome to email me and chat about something if you're looking for it. And thank you for listening.
Beautiful. Thanks so much for sharing. And I will definitely put all of that in the show notes as well, and I can share from personal experience that it has been a pleasure working with you in a professional way as well, and learning from your classes and from you one-on-one as well. And so with that, I will just thank you again for your time. It is my pleasure to and my service and my own source of creation and play to create this space and get to just have these really fun conversations for me, because trust that it benefits others as well, but really just enjoy them a lot myself as well, which is what the journey is all about. So thanks again so much for being here, and I trust I will talk to you soon.
Same, and really appreciate it. Thank you again.
Okay, take care, Michael.
Thanks for listening. If you like the episode, please subscribe, leave a review, or head over to my Patreon page to become a member of the Be the Vessel community with exclusive monthly benefits and to connect with me directly. You may also find me on Instagram at DrDaniel_Atkins or through my website, DrDanielAtkins.com, where you can also subscribe to my newsletter to stay updated on all happenings. I'd love to hear from you. Until then, may you be the light, the frequency, and the vessel for your highest vision.